be expected to occur. Many years would pass before Patterson realized that the reason for this lay with a regrettable Ohio inventor named Thomas Midgley, Jr. Midgley was an engineer by training, and the world would no doubt have been a safer place if he had stayed so. Instead, he developed an interest in the industrial applications of chemistry. In 1921, while working for the General Motors Research Corporation in Dayton, Ohio, he investigated a compound called tetraethyl lead, also known confusingly as lead tetraether, and discovered that it significantly reduced the juddering condition known as engine knock. Even though lead was widely known to be dangerous, by the early years of the 20th century, it could be found in all manner of consumer products. Food came in cans sealed with lead solder. Water was often stored in lead-lined tanks. It was sprayed onto fruit as a pesticide in the form of lead arsenate. It even came as part of the packaging of toothpaste tubes. Hardly a product existed that didn't bring a little lead into consumers' lives. However, nothing gave it a greater and more lasting intimacy than its addition to gasoline. Lead is a neurotoxin. Get too much of it, and you can irreparably damage the brain and central nervous system. Among the many symptoms associated with overexposure are blindness, insomnia, kidney failure, hearing loss, cancer, palsies, and convulsions. In its most acute form, it produces abrupt and terrifying hallucinations, disturbing to victims and onlookers alike, which generally then give way to coma and death. You really don't want to get too much lead into your system. On the other hand, lead was easy to extract and work, and almost embarrassingly profitable to produce industrially. And tetraethyl lead did indubitably stop engines from knocking. So in 1923, three of America's largest corporations, General Motors, DuPont, and Standard Oil of New Jersey, formed a joint enterprise called the Ethyl Gasoline Corporation, later shortened to simply Ethyl Corporation, with a view to making as much tetraethyl lead as the world was willing to buy. And that proved to be a very great deal. They called their additive ethyl, or ethyl, because it sounded friendlier and less toxic than lead, and introduced it for public consumption, in more ways than most people realized, on February the 1st, 1923. Almost at once, production workers began to exhibit the staggered gait and confused faculties that mark the recently poisoned. Also, almost at once, the Ethyl Corporation embarked on a policy of calm but unyielding denial that would serve it well for decades. As Sharon Birch McGrain notes in her absorbing history of industrial chemistry, Prometheans in the Lab, when employees at one plant developed irreversible delusions, a spokesman blandly informed reporters, "These men probably went insane because they worked too hard." Altogether, at least 15 workers died in the early days of production of leaded gasoline, and untold numbers of others became ill, often violently so. The exact numbers are unknown because the company nearly always managed to hush up news of embarrassing leakages, spills, and poisonings. At times, however, suppressing the news became impossible, most notably in 1924, when in a matter of days, five production workers died and 35 more were turned into permanent staggering wrecks at a single ill-ventilated facility. As rumors circulated about the dangers of the new product, Ethyl's ebullient inventor, Thomas Midgley, decided to hold a demonstration for reporters to allay their concerns. As he chatted away about the company's commitment to safety, he poured tetraethyl lead over his hands, then held a beaker of it to his nose for 60 seconds, claiming all the while that he could repeat the procedure daily without harm. In fact, Midgley knew only too well the perils of lead poisoning. He had himself been made seriously ill from overexposure a few months earlier, and now, except when reassuring journalists, never went near the stuff if he could help it. Buoyed by the success of leaded gasoline, Midgley now turned to another technological problem of the age. Refrigerators in the 1920s were often appallingly risky because they used dangerous gases that sometimes leaked. One leak from a refrigerator at a hospital in Cleveland, Ohio in 1929 killed more than 100 people. Midgley set out to create a gas that was stable, non-flammable, non-corrosive, and safe to breathe. With an instinct for the regrettable that was almost uncanny, he invented chlorofluorocarbons, or CFCs. Seldom has an industrial product been more swiftly or unfortunately embraced. CFCs went into production in the early 1930s and found 1,000 applications in everything from car air conditioners to deodorant sprays, before it was noticed, half a century later, that they were devouring the ozone in the stratosphere. As you will be aware, this was not a good thing. Ozone is a form of oxygen in which each molecule bears 3 atoms of oxygen instead of 2. It is a bit of a chemical oddity in that at ground level it is a pollutant, while way up in the stratosphere it is beneficial, since it soaks up dangerous ultraviolet radiation. Beneficial ozone is not terribly abundant, however. If it were distributed evenly throughout the stratosphere, it would form a layer just 1/8 of an inch or so thick. That is why it is so easily disturbed, and why such disturbances don't take long to become critical. Chlorofluorocarbons are also not very abundant. They constitute only about 1 part per billion of the atmosphere as a whole, but they are extravagantly destructive. 1 pound of CFCs can capture and annihilate 70,000 pounds of atmospheric ozone. CFCs also hang around for a long time, about a century on average, wreaking havoc all the while. They are also great heat sponges. A single CFC molecule is about 10,000 times more efficient at exacerbating greenhouse effects than a molecule of carbon dioxide. And carbon dioxide is, of course, no slouch itself as a greenhouse gas. In short, chlorofluorocarbons may ultimately prove to be just about the worst invention of the 20th century. Midgley never knew this, because he died long before anyone realized how destructive CFCs were. His death was itself memorably unusual. After becoming crippled with polio, Midgley invented a contraption involving a series of motorized pulleys that automatically raised or turned him in bed. In 1944, he became entangled in the cords as the machine went into action and was strangled. If you were interested in finding out the ages of things, the University of Chicago in the 1940s was the place to be. Willard Libby was in the process